In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God. Amen. Some of you remember when we were going systematically through the commentary of St. Cyril on the Gospel of Luke. And the methodology that we used was a simple one. We agreed not to read what Cyril's commentary was. We would read only the section that he was covering from the Gospel. And then we would try to draw inferences from what we knew about Cyril. What was our patron? Well, first of all, he's a man. Second of all, Cyril was a monastic. He wed himself to the church in a very, very deep way. He became a priest and he became a father. He was a theologian and he taught and he fought against heterodoxy. And he was a patriarch, so he was a ruler. So we would take a look at each of the lines of the gospel and say, now how would a father analyze this? Or how would a patriarch analyze this? Or how would a simple priest or a monk analyze what we just have before us? And it was thrilling almost, at least speaking for myself, when I was able to figure out before I had actually read the commentary what he was going to say. I myself said it first, because I hadn't read ahead. And the object of this kind of Bible study was so that you would acquire the mind of Cyril, who is the patron of our church. Now, I would expect when you have a church that is named after St. John, or you have a church that's named after St. Mark, or the like, that you would try to emulate as much the patronage of that church as possible. Otherwise, you're just paying lip service, like we want a brand. Like, do you drink Pepsi or do you drink Coke? You'd be surprised when I go to a restaurant and they say, what would you like to drink? I said, I'd like a cola. And they are dumbfounded by the word, I want a cola. You know, C&C Cola, King Cola, RC Cola, Pepsi Cola, Coca-Cola, Shasta Cola. These are colas. I would like a cola. The brand that you have, I'm not really concerned with. I want a cola. Do you have a cola? Today I'm going to read to you from a commentary from St. John Chrysostom. And again, it brought a smile to my face because, as many of you know who have listened to me over the years, I go off tangentially from the message that I started with because something inside me spurs it on. And now I find, as I was studying the portion of the Gospel of John that dealt with a man who was born blind, and St. John Chrysostom, he takes off in a direction that is amazing. And I want to share that with you. Now, some of these words are going to be very pointed, and you're going to say, well, it's not me, or I know somebody like that. That's usually what happens when you are reading something that is reproving. But I thought it was most beneficial for me to have read it, and I wanted to share it with you. I told Mina Saeed, one of our deacons, I said a couple of weeks ago, I know what I'm going to say. And I actually offered it to him as a subject if he were going to give the homily. And he said, well, it's probably better if you do it, being a priest and a father. And so I'm not loath to do this. But sharing it with you, you have to listen carefully. And I want each of you in turn to think that these words were written only for you, not somebody else who is sitting next to you or somebody else that you know, but were written only for you. Now, St. John Chrysostom calls the man who was born blind the herald of truth. And when I spoke about this in church, I said, notice the way in which he turned from somebody that was giving a simple narrative of the things that had occurred to him at the hands of Jesus to someone who is now standing boldly and accusing the Jews exactly of that which they were guilty. He became very bold and he said, wilt thou become his disciple? And then what did they say? Well, we are Moses' disciples. You are his disciple. As for this man, we don't know who he is, but we know who Moses is. You are altogether born in sins, and now do you teach us? Think how reprehensible it was for this man who had no position in society whatsoever, who just minutes before sat and begged, was now talking to the chief rulers of his society. So St. John Chrysostom calls him the herald of truth. Hast thou beheld the herald of truth? How poverty was no hindrance to his true wisdom? Seest thou what reproaches, what sufferings he bare from the beginning, and how by word and by deed he testified? Now these things are recorded that we too may imitate them. For if the blind man, the beggar, who had not even seen him, straightway showed such boldness, even before he was encouraged by Christ, standing opposed to a whole people, murderous, possessed, and raving, who desired by means of his voice to condemn Christ, if he neither yielded nor gave back, but most boldly stopped their mouths and chose rather to be cast out than to betray the truth, how much more ought we, who have lived so long in the faith, who have seen 10,000 marvels wrought by faith, who have received greater benefits than he, have recovered the sight of the eyes within, and beheld the ineffable mysteries, and who have been called to such honor, how ought we, I say, to exhibit all boldness of speech towards those who attempt to accuse and who say anything against the Christians, and to stop their mouths and not to acquiesce without an effort. I remember when I first became a priest and there was a very strong movement in UC Irvine, and they had these Muslims and they were speaking very boldly about their faith, and Irini Mina and a few other people came and approached me who were students there and said, Abuna, will you go to church and will you counter the things that are being said? And I said to them, why can't you do it, Irini? Why can't you? And I'm not calling her out. But it is this exact boldness that was missing, was it not? And I have been pulled out like a puppet from, you know, a vaudevillian trunk many times to entertain somebody because they didn't have the wherewithal. Oh, I can't say that. You want me to go and speak? Me? Forget what St. Peter, you know, said about always being ready to give an account of those things that give you hope. Let me go on. This is St. John Chrysostom. And we shall be able to do this if we are bold and give heed to the Scriptures and hear them not carelessly. For if one should come in here, meaning church, if one should come in here regularly, even though he read not at home, if he attends to what is said here, 1 year even is sufficient to make him well versed in them, the Scriptures. Because we do not today read one kind of Scripture and tomorrow another, but always and continually the same. Still such is the wretched disposition of the many, that after so much reading, they do not even know the names of the books, and are not ashamed nor tremble at entering so carelessly into a place where they may hear God's word. Now, I have to use some alternative language here, because the words that St. John Chrysostom uses are anachronistic. For example, he says, "Yet if a harper or a dancer or a stage player call the city." What does that mean? That means if... Jesus, it's been so long, I'm going to really date myself. Who does rock concerts these days? Bruce Springsteen? Who? I don't know. But if a rocker is going to have a rock concert in a big stadium, people run. Wasn't there a girl from our diocese that was killed in Las Vegas by a gun that was supposedly discharged without intent? Therefore, the person owning the gun got off. But she was in Las Vegas to attend a concert, a big concert, where, as you know, somebody in a hotel window peeped out with some automatic rifles and mowed down the place. So here or there, what can we say? People will go all the way to Las Vegas to hear somebody sing. Oh, I can't go to church, it's too far. Are you kidding me? Or the dancer. How many dancers do we have? They talk about the people that make these videos, and they have all of the choreography. And oh, did you see that? Did you see that? Or stage player. Well, we don't go. I mean, in Britain, and perhaps, you know, in certain parts of big cities, they still have playhouses where thespians walk the boards, to turn a phrase. But if you call a harper or a dancer a stage player, they all run eagerly and feel obliged to him for the call and spend the half of an entire day in attending to him alone. But when God speaketh to us by the prophets and the apostles, we yawn. We scratch ourselves. We're busy with our children. We are drowsy. And in summer, the heat seems too great. Nobody wants to go to church when it's hot, right? You know, why don't they have better air conditioning in churches? But in summer, we betake ourselves to the marketplace, and again in winter, the rain and the mire, the mud, are a hindrance. And we sit at home, we don't go to church. Yet at horse races, you ever been to a horse race? Ever been to Santa Anita? I have. And you stand out there? And how about every year? Every year they have the Kentucky Derby, and all of the women dress up in the fanciest hats. They all drink mint juleps. Mint julep, by the way, is worth having in moderation. And they stand in the heat, and they wait, and they wait, and they wait. You know how long the horse race takes? A couple of minutes. They wait all day long. And how about Churchill Downs? How about at least in Churchill Downs, you get a 10-minute horse race. They have to go around several times. They jump over bushes, and they have water barriers and walls and different things like that. And that's much more of a real race. But do you go to? You know, I remember when we bought this church, and the first thing the women said was, "Well, what are we going to do when it rains?" First thing the women said, "What are we going to do when it rains? We have to go to the bathroom." Where are the bathrooms? Oh, now you remember. Andy? That's from Amos and Andy. You don't have any idea what I'm talking about. And it makes me so happy that you don't. Yet at the horse races there is no roof over their heads to keep out the wet. The greater number, while heavy rains are falling and the wind is dashing and the water into their faces, stand like madmen, caring not for the cold and the wet and the mud and the length of way, and nothing either keeps them at home or prevents them from going thither, going to the race. But here, where there are roofs overhead, yeah, we've got one, and where the warmth is admirable, they hold back instead at running together, and this too, when the gain is that of their own souls. How is this tolerable? Tell me. Thus it happens that while we are more skilled than any in those matters, in things necessary, we are more ignorant than children. If a man call you it says here charioteer. We haven't had charioteers for a long time. What would be today's equivalent? If a man call you a NASCAR driver, well, some guys would be all puffed up by that, you know, especially if their names were Ricky Bobby. Calls you a charioteer or a dancer, you say, I've been insulted. You don't call me that. You know? It's kind of like, I guess, you're calling somebody a farmer from Egypt, and the falah, right? You're a farmer? Insult me, I'm a farmer. I have a degree in agriculture. I went to the Ministry of Agriculture. You've been insulted if a man calls you such, and you use every means to wipe off the affront. But if he draw you to be a spectator of the action, you do not start away. And the art whose name you shun, you almost in every case pursue. Suppose somebody called you a brawler. Well, if you happen to work for the UFC, to be a brawler is a grand title to have after your name, because you're a mixed martial artist who is known as somebody that can stand and slug in the middle of the ring. But where you ought to have both the action and the name, both to be and to be called a Christian, you do not even know what kind of thing the action is. What can be worse than this folly? These things I have desired continually to say to you, but I fear I gain hatred in vain and unprofitability. You don't know how many times I've been admonished by people by the types of sermons that I give. You have no idea. And yet I continue unflinchingly. For I perceive that not only the young are mad, means avid fans, mad. Rabid is another word that St. John Chrysostom might have used. But the old also, and that's true. About whom I am especially ashamed, meaning the old people. When I see a man venerable from his white hairs, disgracing those white hairs and drawing a child after him, what is worse than this mockery? What more shameful than this conduct? The child is taught by the father to act unseemly. Do the words sting? Do the words sting? This is what I desire, that you should suffer the pain caused by the words in order to be delivered from the disgraced caused by the actions. For there are some too far colder than these, who are not even ashamed at the things spoken of, nay, who even put together a long argument in defense of the action. Have you ever told somebody, you know, that the reason that you do this thing is because it causes you to have stress relief? Everybody that's ever taken drugs has that excuse, that as far as I know, the only stress that a person has, I'm recalling a moment from the TV sitcom called Taxi, And there's this guy, Jim Ignatowski, who was famous as a person that used drugs. He said, oh, there's only one thing wrong with this pill. And the guy that he had just given it to and had just swallowed, I said, what is it? What is it? He said, well, it wears off. If you ask them who was Amos or Obadiah or what the number of the prophets or apostles, they cannot even open their mouth. But for horses, charioteers, they compose excuses more cleverly than sophists or rhetoricians. And after all this, they say, what's the harm? What's the loss? I once went into the home of a man not far from my own house in Whittier. And this man hadn't been to church, and I went to see him to see what the cause was. And he was angry with God. I said, well, why are you angry with God? God let me go to Las Vegas and lose all my money. And not only that, he made me borrow money against my own house, and he let me take some of the money from my in-laws. And now I'm broke and I can't pay them back. Why did God let me do that? This is what I groan for, that ye do not so much as know the action is a loss, nor have a sense of its evils. God hath given to thee an appointed space of life for serving him, and dost thou, while thou spendest it vainly and at random, and on nothing useful, still ask, what loss is there? If thou hast spent a little money to no purpose, thou callest it a loss. I lost money on that deal. I thought it was pretty good, but it was bad. But when thou spendest the whole days of thine upon the devil's pageants, thinkest thou that thou art doing nothing wrong? Thou oughtest to spend all thy life in supplications and prayers, whereas thou wastest thy life and substance heedlessly, and to thine own hurt, on shouts and uproar and shameful words and fighting and unseasonable pleasure and actions performed by trickery. And after all this, thou askest, what's the loss? What's the loss? Not knowing that thou shouldst be lavish of anything rather than time. You've all heard that in America, time is money. Time is money. Gold, if thou shalt have spent, thou mayest get again. But if thou lose time, thou shalt hardly recover that. Little is dealt out to us in this present life. If therefore we apply it not as we ought, what shall we say when we depart there? For tell me, if thou hadst commanded one of thy sons to learn some art, and when he had continually stayed at home or even passed his time somewhere else, would not the teacher reject him? Would he not say to thee, thou hast made an appointment with me and at an appointed time, but if now thy son will not spend this time with me but in other places, how shall I produce him to thee as a scholar? You know, I've told this. When I was in St. George, I said this. I said this many times. I said, why are you in church? Why did you bother coming? If you don't want to pay attention, if you're not going to pray, if you're not going to venerate, why did you come? You could go to the movies. You could go to one of those plays that were talked about. And there's sporting events almost every Sunday to draw your attention away. And our sporting events, you know, they're like the festivals of summer that were honored in the Olympiad every 4 years. I mean, we have a spectacle. We have bands and cheerleaders, and we have announcers and full-screen TVs from every corner of stadiums that seat, well, in case of the Rose Bowl, 100,000 people. So why do we come to church? If you don't come to church with joy, man, I'm telling you personally, You would spend that time better and more effectively somewhere else, so that at the end of your life, when you got your ticket punched, then it said downward, not upward, you'd say, well, I've got my memories. But for a person who comes in with a sour face and a sour disposition and has decided they're not going to learn, or that every word of rebuke is meant for someone else and not for them, why are you there? I remember one time when we first started St. George Church in 1980, and there was this old woman, and she was teaching Sunday school. And this old woman was in charge of some young women between the ages of 12 and 14. I think Yusi was one of those girls. How old were you in 1980? What?
Six.
Six, okay, it couldn't have been Yusi. Had to be some of the other kids. But I looked at the kids, and I made a face with a downturned mouth. And I said, does that look spiritual to you? Isn't it far more spiritual to see a smile? Judge for yourself, children. If you see somebody doing something, don't think that you have to emulate it simply because they have been put over you. They might have been put over you because it was a stopgap measure, because they had nobody else to fill the space, or because the person who was in charge of it didn't really even care. But a person like that should not be in charge of the souls of children. If you do not feel joy in what you are doing, how can you possibly transmit it to someone else? You know, when I am with my friends and we talk about going out to eat, I have never seen anybody turn their face upside down and talk about a place and then enthusiastically at the end say, let's go eat there. My first response, are you a fan of stomach aches? And this is what we do, is it not? When we come to church, we go, Not right. And it's not right to put the burden of some kind of social rectitude on a person who can barely make it to church anyway because they are so filled with self-doubting. We have to help that person. So you don't say to them, oh, why are you dressed like that? What are you wearing those clothes for? It may be enough that they are there. And if they come in contact with people that are really happy to be there, then they may be emboldened and they may say, you know what? I think I can really like this. So I read this to you. This comes from page 210 in the commentary of St. John Chrysostom on the Gospel of John. And it concludes, and all of this concludes what? His homily on the man born blind. Because how blind are we if we miss the point of all that is around us? All of the joy and all of the expectancy of the risen Lord at every single communion service. We recount everything in the narrative. And we have the possibility of going forth renewed. Where else do you get that chance? See, in every other hall that you enter, the baggage that you bring in is the baggage that you take out. But in the church, the baggage that you bring in is taken up by God Himself and you leave lightened of the hardship and the misery, if you will allow it, if you will believe. So I hope, he said, I know the word sting, and I know that you suffer pain by hearing these words, but I'm worried that the ones of you that do not have pain have missed the entire meaning of my time with you tonight. Because if you get it, then there should be some self-analysis. If you don't get it, you will walk out unchanged. See, church is supposed to be life-changing. Changing in a way so that your spirit is lighter. That you are refreshed. Not for the psychological state of being, so your petty interactions amongst people as you leave are going to be more pleasant. No, but you feel on the inside that the things that I have done that have separated me from God, that have caused me guilt, they are no longer a barrier. They have been broken down by His power, and now I am free to embrace Him. Have you ever felt distant from somebody in the church that you go to? Some of you tonight don't come to this church regularly. But if you feel distant, if you feel that there's something, if you feel that you cannot embrace that person, and even after you have kissed one another with a holy kiss, then you've missed it. Or you are simply a liar. And I'm trying to prevail upon you, saying, don't be that way. I'm echoing the words, and in many places repeating what our master, St. John Chrysostom, has said. Glory be to our holy church, to God the Father Almighty, and to the blessed congregation of this diocese.